April 21st. Our narrative today from the Old Testament comes from the book of Joshua, chapter 22, verse 21, through chapter 23, verse 16. Let's have a brief commentary on what we'll be reading about today, and I think that will help us gain understanding. Well, the tribes were concerned that without some visible sign of unity between the people on the two sides of the Jordan, future generations might see conflict between them. The altar, patterned after the altar of the Lord, was to remind these people that they all worshiped the same God. Often we need to be reminded of the faith of our fathers. What actions demonstrate to your children your reliance on God and remind them of what He's done? Well, take the time to establish family traditions that will help your children remember. Now, Joshua knew the nation's weak spots. Before dying, he called the people together and gave commands to help them where they were most likely to slip. Number one, he said, follow all that's written in the book of instruction without turning aside. Number two, don't associate with the pagan nations or worship their gods. Number three, don't intermarry with the pagan nations. These temptations were right in their backyard. Our associations and relationships can be temptations to us as well. It's wise to identify our weak spots before we break down. Then we can develop strategies to overcome these temptations instead of being overcome by them. Joshua was dying, and so he called all the leaders of the nation together to give them his final words of encouragement and instruction. His whole message can be summarized in this verse. Cling tightly to the Lord your God. Joshua had been a living example of those words, and he wanted that to be his legacy. For what do you want to be remembered? And what do you want to pass on to your children and associates? What legacy do you want to leave behind? You can leave them nothing better than the admonition to hold on to God. Now, we'll read about a chilling prediction about the consequences of intermarriage with the Canaanite nations, and that, of course, eventually became a reality. Numerous stories in the book of Judges show what Israel had to suffer because of failure to follow God wholeheartedly. Now, God was supremely loving and patient with Israel, just as He is today with us. But we must not confuse His patience with us as approval of or indifference to our sin. Beware of demanding your own way, because eventually you may get it, along with all its painful consequences. And now, let's begin our narration today, here in the Old Testament. April 21st, the Old Testament. Joshua chapter 22, verse 21, through chapter 23, verse 16. Then the people of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh answered the heads of the clans of Israel. The Lord, the Mighty One, is God. The Lord, the Mighty One, is God. He knows the truth, and may Israel know it too. We have not built the altar in treacherous rebellion against the Lord. If we have done so, do not spare our lives this day. If we have built an altar for ourselves to turn away from the Lord, or to offer burnt offerings or grain offerings or peace offerings, may the Lord Himself punish us. The truth is, we have built this altar because we fear that in the future, your descendants will say to ours, what right do you have to worship the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has placed the Jordan River as a barrier between our people and you people of Reuben and Gad. You have no claim to the Lord, so your descendants may prevent our descendants from worshiping the Lord. So we decided to build the altar, not for burnt offerings or sacrifices, but as a memorial. It will remind our descendants and your descendants that we too have the right to worship the Lord at His sanctuary with our burnt offerings, sacrifices, and peace offerings. Then your descendants will not be able to say to ours, you have no claim to the Lord. If they say this, our descendants can reply, look at this copy of the Lord's altar that our ancestors made. It is not for burnt offerings or sacrifices. It is a reminder of the relationship both of us have with the Lord. Far be it from us to rebel against the Lord or turn away from Him by building our own altar for burnt offerings, grain offerings, or sacrifices. Only the altar of the Lord our God that stands in front of the tabernacle may be used for that purpose. When Phinehas the priest and the leaders of the community, the heads of the clans of Israel, heard this from the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they were satisfied. Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, replied to them, "Today we know the Lord is among us because you have not committed this treachery against the Lord as we thought. Instead, you have rescued Israel from being destroyed by the hand of the Lord." Then Phinehas, son of Eleazar the priest, and the other leaders left the tribes of Reuben and Gad in Gilead and returned to the land of Canaan to tell the Israelites what had happened. And all the Israelites were satisfied and praised God and spoke no more of war against Reuben and Gad. The people of Reuben and Gad named the altar Witness, for they said, "It is a witness between us and them that the Lord is our God too." The years passed, and the Lord had given the people of Israel rest from all their enemies. Joshua, who was now very old, called together all the elders, leaders, judges, and officers of Israel. He said to them, "I am now a very old man. You have seen everything the Lord your God has done for you during my lifetime. The Lord your God has fought for you against your enemies. I have allotted to you as your homeland all the land of the nations yet unconquered, as well as the land of those we have already conquered, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. This land will be yours, for the Lord your God will himself drive out all the people living there now. You will take possession of their land, just as the Lord your God promised you. So be very careful to follow everything Moses wrote in the book of instruction. Do not deviate from it, turning either to the right or to the left. Make sure you do not associate with the other people still remaining in the land. Do not even mention the names of their gods, much less swear by them or serve them or worship them. Rather, cling tightly to the Lord your God, as you have done until now. For the Lord has driven out great and powerful nations for you, and no one has yet been able to defeat you. Each one of you will put to flight 1,000 of the enemy, for the Lord your God fights for you, just as he promised. So be very careful to love the Lord your God. But if you turn away from him and cling to the customs of the survivors of these nations remaining among you, and if you intermarry with them, then know for certain that the Lord your God will no longer drive them out of your land. Instead, they will be a snare and a trap to you, a whip for your backs and thorny brambles in your eyes, and you will vanish from this good land the Lord your God has given you. Soon I will die, going the way of everything on earth. Deep in your hearts, you know that every promise of the Lord your God has come true. Not a single one has failed. But as surely as the Lord your God has given you the good things he promised, he will also bring disaster on you if you disobey him. He will completely destroy you from this good land he has given you. If you break the covenant of the Lord your God by worshiping and serving other gods, his anger will burn against you, and you will quickly vanish from the good land he has given you. And now as we turn our attention to the reading of the New Testament, our scripture today comes from the book of Luke, chapter 20, verses 27 through 47. Here's a brief overview. We'll be reading about the Sadducees. They were a group of conservative religious leaders, and they honored only the Pentateuch, that is, the books of Genesis through Deuteronomy. That was their entire scripture. They also did not believe in a resurrection of the dead because they could find no mention of it in those books. The Sadducees decided to try their hand at tricking Jesus. So they brought him a question that they probably had used successfully to stump the Pharisees. After addressing their question about marriage, Jesus answered their real question about the resurrection, basing his answer on the writings of Moses, an authority they respected. He upheld belief in the resurrection. But let's not get confused here. Jesus' statement does not mean that people will not recognize their spouses in heaven. It simply means that we must not think of heaven as an extension of life as we know it now. Our relationships in this life are limited by time, death, and sin. Now, we don't know everything about our resurrection life, but Jesus affirms that relationships will be different from what we're used to here and now. Now, Jesus answered the Sadducees' question, and then he went beyond it to the real issue. People may ask you tough religious questions, such as, how can a loving God allow people to suffer or starve or whatever? If God knows what I'm going to do, do I have any free choice? If they do, follow Jesus' example. First, answer them to the best of your ability, and then look for the real issue. Hurt over a personal tragedy, for example, or difficulty in making a decision? Often the spoken question is only a test, not of your ability to answer hard questions, but of your willingness to listen and care. Now, the teachers of religious law loved the benefits associated with their position, and they sometimes cheated the poor in order to get even more benefits. Every job has its rewards, but gaining rewards should never become more important than doing the job faithfully. God will punish people who use their position of responsibility to cheat others. Use whatever resources you have been given to help others and not just yourself. And now let's begin our narration today here in the New Testament. April 21st, the New Testament. Luke chapter 20, verses 27 through 47. Then Jesus was approached by some Sadducees, religious leaders who say there is no resurrection from the dead. They posed this question: Teacher, Moses gave us a law that if a man dies, leaving a wife but no children, his brother should marry the widow and have a child who will carry on the brother's name. Well, suppose there were seven brothers. The oldest one married and then died without children. So the second brother married the widow, but he also died. Then the third brother married her. This continued with all seven of them, who died without children. Finally, the woman also died. So tell us, whose wife will she be in the resurrection? For all seven were married to her. Jesus replied, Marriage is for people here on earth. But in the age to come, those worthy of being raised from the dead will neither marry nor be given in marriage, and they will never die again. In this respect, they will be like angels. They are children of God and children of the resurrection. But now, as to whether the dead will be raised, even Moses proved this when he wrote about the burning bush. Long after Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had died, he referred to the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. So, he is the God of the living, not the dead, for they are all alive to him. Well said, teacher, remarked some of the teachers of religious law who were standing there. And then no one dared to ask him any more questions. Then Jesus presented them with a question. Why is it, he asked, that the Messiah is said to be the son of David? For David himself wrote in the book of Psalms, The Lord said to my Lord, Sit in the place of honor at my right hand, until I humble your enemies, making them a footstool under your feet. Since David called the Messiah Lord, how can the Messiah be his son? Then, with the crowds listening, he turned to his disciples and said, Beware of these teachers of religious law, for they like to parade around in flowing robes and love to receive respectful greetings as they walk in the marketplaces. And how they love the seats of honor in the synagogues and the head table at banquets. Yet they shamelessly cheat widows out of their property and then pretend to be pious by making long prayers in public. Because of this, they will be severely punished. Psalm 89, verses 14 through 37. Let's take a look at what we're going to be reading about here in Psalms today. Righteousness, justice, love, and truth. That's the foundation of God's throne. And they're central characteristics of the way God rules. They summarize his character. As God's ambassadors, we should exhibit the same traits when we deal with people. Make sure your actions flow out of righteousness, justice, love, and faithfulness. Because any unfair, unloving, or dishonest action cannot come from God. David has promised to have God's power to accomplish God's will. Without God's help, well, we are weak and powerless. Inadequate for even the simplest spiritual tasks. But when we're filled with God's Spirit, His power flows through us, and our accomplishments will exceed our expectations. Now, in light of Israel's continued disobedience throughout history, this is an amazing promise we'll be reading about here today. God promised that David's descendants would always sit on the throne. but that if the people disobeyed, they would be punished. Yet, even through their disobedience and punishment, God would never break faith with them. Israel, of course, did disobey. Evil ran rampant. The nation was divided. Exile came. But through it all, a remnant of God's people remained faithful. Now, centuries later, the Messiah arrived, the eternal king from David's line, just as God had promised. All that God promises, he fulfills. And he will not take back even one word of what he says. God can also be trusted to save us, as he promised he would. God is completely reliable. Psalm 89, verses 14 through 17. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Unfailing love and truth walk before you as attendants. Happy are those who hear the joyful call to worship, for they will walk in the light of your presence, Lord. They rejoice all day long in your wonderful reputation. They exult in your righteousness. You are their glorious strength. It pleases you to make us strong. Yes, our protection comes from the Lord, and he, the Holy One of Israel, has given us our King. Long ago, you spoke in a vision to your faithful people. You said, I have raised up a warrior. I have selected him from the common people to be king. I have found my servant David. I have anointed him with my holy oil. I will steady him with my hand. With my powerful arm, I will make him strong. His enemies will not defeat him, nor will the wicked overpower him. I will beat down his adversaries before him and destroy those who hate him. My faithfulness and unfailing love will be with him, and by my authority he will grow in power. I will extend his rule over the sea, his dominion over the rivers, and he will call out to me, You are my Father, my God, and the rock of my salvation. I will make him my firstborn son, the mightiest king on earth. I will love him and be kind to him forever. My covenant with him will never end. I will preserve an heir for him. His throne will be as endless as the days of heaven. But if his descendants forsake my instructions and fail to obey my regulations, if they do not obey my decrees and fail to keep my commands, then I will punish their sin with the rod and their disobedience with beating. But I will never stop loving him, nor fail to keep my promise to him. No, I will not break my covenant. I will not take back a single word I said. I have sworn an oath to David, and in my holiness I cannot lie. His dynasty will go on forever. His kingdom will endure as the sun. It will be as eternal as the moon, my faithful witness in the sky. Interlude. Proverbs chapter 13, verses 17 through 19. An unreliable messenger stumbles into trouble, but a reliable messenger brings healing. If you ignore criticism, you will end in poverty and disgrace. If you accept correction, you will be honored. It is pleasant to see dreams come true, but fools refuse to turn from evil to attain them.